And we got November 12th. We were in the middle of a heavy action happening over in the Middle East there that you got to get up on. And you're not going to get any higher than what we have here. We were at the top. And share it, please. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Don, so much. Meanwhile, U.S. inching toward World War III while Biden administration hides U.S. casualties. This is from Larry Johnson, highly reliable former CIA. While world's attention is focused on the war raging between Israel and Hamas, the military confrontation between the U.S. and Hezbollah is heating up. Since Hamas' attack of 7 October and subsequent retaliation by Israel, U.S. military bases and outposts in Syria and Iraq are facing daily attack with rocket, missile, and mortar. I learned today from someone who regularly visits Walter Reed that the wards are filling up with U.S. military wounded in recent attacks on those bases. While White House and DOD are working actively to suppress that information, apparently out of fear the American people will recoil at the news of losses and step out of pressure for the U.S. to get out of Iraq and Syria, they are accumulating. Hezbollah leader Nasrallah was very clear in his sermon a week ago Friday that the U.S. attacked Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria, that Hezbollah will retaliate. The New York Post just reported U.S. combat aircraft hit an Iranian storage depot in Syria. U.S. warplanes struck a weapons storage facility used by Iran and its proxies in eastern Syria shortly after Tehran-backed Houthi forces in Yemen shot down an American MQ-9 Reaper drone. In a statement, Secretary of Defense Austin said the strike was in response to more than three dozen attacks on American military sites across Iraq and Syria since October 17th. The Biden admin has vowed not to get in direct combat on Israel's behalf, which they've already violated. But U.S. forces remain in the region on a counter-ISIS mission. Remember, we created ISIS. While the Pentagon dispatched two aircraft carrier strike group to the eastern Mediterranean, this is not a strategic blow to Iran and Hezbollah. It's a tit-for-tat strike certain to inspire Iran and Hezbollah to escalate attacks on U.S. bases in Syria and Iraq and more strikes on Israeli positions in northern Israel. Combat between the U.S. and Hezbollah is escalating. No sign either side had prepared to back down. Nasrallah is set to give a new sermon on Saturday, expected to address the recent attacks on Hezbollah and civilians in Lebanon. And by the way, Israel, I learned over the break, is attacking Hezbollah in Lebanon as we speak. Meanwhile, the war is raging in Gaza, with both Israeli Defense Force and Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad claiming success. Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, is keeping a running list of Israel's killed in action. You can see the list here. The Quinn's News Network reported the majority of those listed are Israeli military personnel. There are videos showing a different perspective. Meanwhile, Israel has a clear advantage in tanks and air power, but Hamas has the advantage of fighting on its home turf. I think it will be weeks before we know the true story of the losses incurred. That said, it looks like Israel is doing the same thing as the U.S., trying to conceal the true extent of their casualties. The Quds Network published this today. Israel's official account published a list of 1,400 victims brutally murdered by Hamas last month. The list turned out to mostly have names of Israeli soldiers. Israeli Haaretz, as well as testimony by Israeli settlers, also revealed many Israelis were killed that day in an attack by Israel's military that targeted Hamas fighters as well as anyone in the area, including Israeli civilians. Israel is facing mounting international diplomatic pressure, including from the Biden admin, all of the BRICS nations, with the exception of India, are condemning Israel's indiscriminate bombing as a war crime and going for a ceasefire. Netanyahu so far, however, is refusing to back off. A comment? The U.S. is attacking Deir Ezzor in Syria. Official comment from U.S. Central Command? Following a series of attacks against U.S. persons in Iraq and Syria, SEP command forces conducted an airstrike against a facility in Syria used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and affiliated groups. We'll take all necessary measures to defend our people against those who are responsible for the attacks, and we'll respond at a time and place of our choosing. I think they are using F-15s, a train facility for some is near my home. Translation. Following a series of attacks against U.S. persons in places where they shouldn't be. Well said. Scott, your thoughts. All of the above.
Well, starting off, India is making a terrible mistake. India is risking its entire political stability because it has a huge Muslim population. Pakistan would want nothing more than India to become destabilized and to carve off more of India into a Islamic Pakistani orbit. And this is the way to do it. India showing favoritism to Israel, shutting down Palestinian voices. It's already in a questionable position because Indian naval officers were arrested in Qatar for spying for Israel. So this could result in India being exposed to all sorts of potential struggles, civil war, destabilization. Remember, the Islamic faith does not like the Hindi pantheon, multiple god worship. It's paganism. It's Hinduism. And the Islamic Quranic instruction is, those are the people in the religion to turn against, not the Christians and not the Jews, really. The Zionist Jew is something entirely different, but the Hinduistic pantheonic religion is very, very disgusting to the Quranic and the Islamic people. So India could be risking something very huge. And the other thing is, all of this, the casualties of Israel have just started because we haven't even seen yet the jihad, the suicide bombers, the bodies being set up as booby traps. All of that is going to increase. Jim?
Very good. Brian?
Well, you know, nobody likes feeling bad, but when it's time to break up a relationship like the one that we have with Israel, it's going to get ugly. This is going to be a very ugly divorce, but it has to happen. I don't know if the American people are going to continue to support this. I think that the gaslighting and the media and the propaganda making Israel appear to be our best buddy has had an effect, but I think it's temporary. I don't think it's going to last for a long time, which means a breakup is imminent. It's probably going to be an ugly divorce. A lot of people are going to get hurt. It's the nature of the beast, but it has to be done because sooner or later, as a nation, we're going to have to break loose and go back to being America, or we will cease to exist as a nation. And I think that's something that Israel would like to see happen.
Yes. Meanwhile, Hall of Shame. Over 500 British MPs back Israel's bombing of Gaza. Only 96 in Westminster supported a parliamentary motion calling for a ceasefire as of 9 November. A parliamentary early day motion brought by Labour MP Richard Burgon on 7 November secured 96 signatories, just 15% of the UK's 650 MPs. The first, brought on 17 October, was signed by 95. The EDM condemns the Hamas attacks on Israel and Israel's siege of Gaza, calling for the release of Hamas hostages and an immediate ceasefire. Some other MPs have expressed support for a ceasefire, but have not signed the EDM. As of 9 November, were aware of around 25, mainly from the Labor Party. After a month of bombing, other MDs numbering over 500 have, as far as we are aware, not called for a ceasefire and support Israel's ongoing campaign in Gaza. This amounts to around 80% of the members of parliament. The Palestinian death toll now surpasses 10,000, mostly women and children, amid UN nation agencies all calling for a ceasefire. Amnesty International has documented indiscriminate attacks on civilians. A team of UN experts has said Israel's campaign in Gaza involves crimes against humanity. A senior UN human rights official declared, "We are seeing a genocide unfolding before our eyes." Meanwhile, the State Department may be well trying to abrogate a Fourth Geneva Convention and turn Gaza and the West Bank into free fire zones. Profoundly disturbing. Again, the State Department would not say directly if they recognize the Fourth Geneva Convention as applying to the West Bank and Gaza. The Fourth Geneva Convention is the bedrock of rights for people living under occupation. Remarks from the State Department today by Principal Deputy Sportsperson Vedant Patel led law professor Francis Boyle to comment, "This sounds pretty ominous to me, in that it seems that Bidenites are going along with Israel, turning Gaza into a free fire zone." If the administration is tacitly claiming that the Fourth Geneva Convention does not apply to the West Bank and Gaza, then he calls by the administration to abide by international law may be a cruel joke. I myself, he being a reporter, repeatedly asked at the end of my question, which law the administration mean when they talk about international law, and never received a response. Instead, Patel threatened to ask me to leave for attempting to insist on a response. The lack of a clear yes or no led to some confusion. It's been longstanding U.S. policy, most notably articulated in the Hansel Memorandum from 1978, to apply the Fourth Geneva Convention to the West Bank and Gaza. Law professor John Quigley notes that in paragraph 4, Hansel refutes Israel's argument that the convention does not apply, and he says it does apply. In paragraph 2, Hansel refutes Israel's arguments on the legality of settlements. However, Mike Pompeo, while he was Secretary of State in the Trump admin, said, "We're recognizing that these settlements don't inherently violate international law. That is important. We're disavowing the deeply flawed 1978 Hansel memo, and we're returning to a balanced and sober Reagan-era approach." Quigley said that Pompeo's statement relates only to the legality of settlements. Pompeo refers to Reagan on that issue. As far as I can tell, Pompeo did not disavow what the Hansel memo says about the Fourth Geneva Convention. Patel notes, "We've had no change in policy as it relates to the Hansel memo." However, Patel added, "The Hansel memo is something that Matt Miller has spoken to a number of months ago as well." Matt Lee of the AP asked Miller in July, "Why don't you reinstate the findings of the determination of the Hansel memorandum about the legality or the legitimacy of settlements?" This led some to argue that the Biden-Blinken State Department has abrogated the Hansel memo and the Fourth Geneva Convention with it. Thus, some argue that Patel's no change remarks means no change from the Pompeo policy. Professor Francis Boyle argued, "Patel made it clear that there has been no change in policy. The Fourth Geneva Convention does not apply to occupied Palestinian territory, including Gaza. As far as the U.S. government is concerned, continue with the Trump-Pompeo policy." Patel just did not want to say it outright. So basically, the Bidenites have given the Israeli the proverbial green light to negate the Fourth Geneva Convention in Gaza and also the West Bank and also East Jerusalem. as far as the Bidenites and Israelis are concerned. The Palestinians are no longer protected persons within the meaning of the Fourth Geneva Convention. The Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949 was originally adopted in reaction to and to prevent against Nazi atrocities against civilians living in occupied territories. God protect the Palestinians. Regardless, Paul has been arguing one remaining avenue of legal redress may be by countries applying the Genocide Convention at the International Court of Justice, also known as the World Court. If a country were to invoke the convention in an emergency process, that could produce legal results. While other lawyers seeking to protect the Palestinians have been trying to petition the International Criminal Court, neither the U.S. nor Israel are parties thereto. The blockage in terms of invoking the Genocide Convention at the World Court may be that Abbas is unwilling to do so, even though he has called what Israel is doing genocide. That would make sense, in my opinion, because I regard Abbas as an Israeli stooge. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, all of these Palestinian leaders, from Yasser Arafat to Abbas to, you know, all of them have been thieves and stooges doing to America what Zelensky was doing, stealing money, doing nothing for the people. And as a result, you know, Hamas and other groups and other freedom-seeking rebel patriot groups have been rising up. And, you know, nothing has been done. What's disturbing about these comments in Pompeo, they're trying to make legal something that's unlawful. They're trying to make, you know, work around. They're trying to be slick. They're trying to be crafty. They're trying to manipulate the language and the documents to make it fit, to make it seem like they're getting away with something. And they're not. The only thing that they're doing is denigrating and decaying and destroying the reputation of the United States of America as an honorable nation with honorable people whose commitments and oaths and declarations and treaties can be trusted. It's shattering that myth. And every nation is growing increasingly contemptuous towards America because it's unreliable at best and it's deceitful at worst in everything. JCPOA is a prime example. This whole disintegration of America and what we stand for is I mean we're the only ones believing our own lies. We're the only ones believing that we can get away with it. The other thing that we've done over 20, 30, 40 years is annihilate the fact that Congress under the Constitution of the United States declares war. And what is war? Well, one could argue sending planes over another person's country and bombing and killing those persons is an act of war. And that country whose people were attacked and killed has every right to declare war against the United States and sink their ships and kill their personnel and kill their government employees and even civilians. War is war. It's not polite. It's not friendly. It's war. It's killing and destroying an enemy so that they can't threaten you or harm you. And when we go over and we threaten and we actually harm other nations, when we bomb Libya in the 1980s, when we allow, you know, other things to have occurred, and now we have the Congress under the Patriot Act and the authorization for military force that gave Bush the authority to go in and wage war without waging war, it's all a fraud and a perversion of our Constitution, and it's only going to get worse. Now we see Congress under McCaul trying to get away with this indirect declaration of war against Iran without waging war, without being accountable. All of this is going to inevitably end up in America suffering, not the world. Every act of hostility and war that we unleash against the world is actually decaying and destroying us. It's destroying our faith in government. It's destroying our cohesion of people. And it's destroying our reputation and our attractiveness throughout the world. The number one failure of all of our politicians has been to fail to understand that Americans and the American ideal the American personality that thrived and flourished up until 1990, I would say, was very attractive and is very attractive to the rest of the world. I've been over to a lot of different countries, and I'll tell you this. When I interface with other foreigners that hate our government, but when they see me and listen to me and are in a conversation with me, they're attracted. They're pleased. They find humor. They find an enjoyment. They find a fresh a breath of truth. And yes, God says, "Be ye my ambassadors." But we have failed to understand that America has that potential to be an attractive personality and winning the hearts and minds of people, being honey instead of vinegar, or being honey instead of sulfuric acid that no one wants to touch. We have lost that self-awareness of who we are, and that has devastated and perverted our entire world relationship, and we need to get back to that. And it's not hard, but it needs to come from authentically confident, happy people. And I see a lot of inauthentic, unhappy people running for president and running for political positions. And I think we need to have a complete wiping of the board clean by all means necessary to get back to that happy American disposition that my father had, my uncles had, my grandfathers had, and that I still hold into my memory. I want that to come back, not what I see being put out by Americans now in the homosexual, transgender, bullying, paranoid, full spectrum dominance, wokeism, the rules-based order, all that bullshit that the rest of the world is just holding its nose in disgust at, because to us, it smells like chocolate pudding. To them, it smells like death and feces wrapped together. Jim?
Wow. Right.
You know, we're acting like the whole world is stupid. Do we think that the Lebanese people are stupid? How about the Syrians? Are they stupid? Saudi Arabians? Are they stupid? Egyptians? Take a look at all of Israel's neighbors. These are smart people. Granted, they believe something different than us when it comes to religion. That's fine. We've never had beef with other religions. We don't go out there and try to change India into a Christian country. Maybe some missionaries do, but that's not a government-supported activity or a government-supported platform. These people are not stupid. I have a lot of respect for these people. And I have a firm belief that their intelligence agencies are probably telling them exactly what's really taking place. And what I fear is that they will cease to be capable of tolerating America, which they have, because we put out good entertainment and good Hollywood and good shows, and we've got a lot of neat inventions, and we have a nice constitution and some things that are really neat about our culture and our society. But Scott's absolutely right. We're degrading very fast. The old gods have returned. The pride, the gay, the homosexuality, the abortions, the things that our society tolerates today that wouldn't have been tolerated in the 50s are so prevalent now that they've adultery, divorce. There's all sorts of things that ail and destroy societies. Take a look at the decline and fall of the Roman civilization and ask yourself, how much do we look like them? And this was back to my point earlier when I was talking about Putin. He's not stupid. These people are not stupid. They can see the writing on the wall. They know what's coming down, and that's going to be an implosion. And I got to tell you, America has one opportunity left, and it's probably going to happen in the next 20 years. If we as a nation don't turn on that dark chatter that is destroying our culture and our fabric and rebel against that or repent from it, we will also go down.
Very sobering and very appropriate. Meanwhile,
yep.
History and analysis. A planned U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran is contemplated. We stand in solidarity with Palestine, but we must recognize that the United States is firmly behind Israel's genocide directed at the people of Palestine. This must be a part of our campaign, namely to reveal the truth regarding Washington's despicable role. The U.S.-led war against the people of the Middle East is a criminal undertaking. Israel is not exerting undue influence against U.S. foreign policy, as outlined by numerous analysts, quite the opposite. It's the other way around. The U.S. military intel establishment, in coordination with powerful financial interests, is calling the shots in regard to Israel's genocidal intent to wipe Palestine off the map. The U.S. is firmly behind the agenda, is part of their foreign policy. Prime Minister Netanyahu is a criminal. He is Washington's proxy, unreservedly endorsed and supported by the Biden admin as well as by the U.S. Congress. The Zionist Greater Israel doctrine, as in all wars of religion since the dawn of mankind, is there to mislead people worldwide as to who is really pulling the strings. Zionism has become a useful instrument embodied in U.S. military doctrine. A promised land broadly coincide with America's hegemonic agenda in the Middle East, namely what the U.S. military has designated as the New Middle East. There are strategic, geopolitical, and economic objectives behind Israel's genocide directed against the people of Palestine. It's implemented on behalf of the United States. The U.S. military and intel apparatus are behind Israel's criminal bombing and invasion of Gaza. The unfolding Middle East war is largely directed against Iran. Historical antecedents, using Israel as a means to attack Iran. In 2003, the War on Iran Project Operation Theater Iran Near Term was already deja vu. It had been on the drawing board of the Pentagon for over 15 years. Recall at the outset of Bush's second term, Vice President Dick Cheney dropped a bombshell, hinting in no uncertain terms that Iran was right at the top of the list of the rogue enemies of America, and that Israel would, so to speak, be doing the bombing for us without U.S. military involvement and without putting pressure on them to do it. For further details, I spelled it out back in May of 2005. Be under no illusion. What Iran is currently contemplated by U.S., NATO, Israel. This Dick Cheney-style option is currently November 2023. What more on the drawing board of the Pentagon, namely, the possibility Israel, which is already bombing Lebanon and Syria, would be incited to wage an attack on Iran, acting on behalf of the United States. Careful timing. In June of 2023, the House of Representatives adopted House Resolution 559, providing a green light to wage war on Iran. The House passed a resolution allowing the use of force against Iran in a meeting without a shred of evidence that Iran has nuclear weapons. Resolved. That the House of Representatives declares it is the policy of the United States that a nuclear Islamic Republic of Iran is not acceptable, that Iran must not be able to obtain nuclear weapons under any circumstances or conditions, to use all means necessary to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, and to recognize and support the freedom of action of partners and allies, including Israel, to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Whereas Iran is tagged without evidence as a nuclear power by the U.S. House of Representatives, Washington fails to acknowledge that Israel is an undeclared nuclear power. In recent developments, Israeli Heritage Minister Mordechai Ilya admitted to the world that Israel has nuclear weapons ready to be used against Palestinians. The Times of Israel reported. He said Sunday, November 5th, One of Israel's options in a war against Hamas is to drop a nuclear bomb on the Gaza Strip. See a video on Israel's nuclear weapons facilities. Outspoken objective of a U.S.-Israel war against Iran natural gas. Reserves of natural gas. Iran ranked second after Russia. Surprise, surprise. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, on a domestic political level, this is going to sink many Republicans. The sad thing is they're shooting themselves in the foot and hitting themselves on the head with a hammer without even knowing it. And the slow divorce away from Israel has been coming for a long time, but it's being quickened, and Brian said it well. So there is a divorce happening because, again, the average American in America does not want war and conflict. They've been trying to get away with it. That's go away from it. That's why they voted for Trump in the first place. And they were semi-satisfied, but he allowed some stupid things to be done, such as putting us in Syria, saying, I love the oil. That's the dumbest thing he could have done. Killing Soleimani, who was the Iranian general that was actually killing ISIS and al-Nusra, who the Israelis were giving al-Nusra and these fanatics medical support and help. But we've been funding and financing these Muslim Wahhabists from Saudi, from Qatar, from UAE, from Turkey. We've been financing and funding them. We're the ones who send them against Bashar Assad as well as Muammar Gaddafi. So I know that from the Shell Game report. But we're now once again trying to double down on this old man thinking, like McCall and the rest of these fools who are up there in fantasy world thinking Americans want this. They don't. And they will not vote for presidents or congressmen who vote for this. That's why I'm also alarmed. And I do not see Trump skating in like Dorothy Hamill in the Olympics, you know, with his arms raised and his leg high in the air on ice, thinking that he's going to come into a clapping standing ovation. Not if he says things like, we're going to spill a gallon of their blood for a drop of ours. Well, that means you're going to war. That means someone has to fight it. That means someone's kids have to die fighting it, Mr. Trump. So let's be cautious on our rhetoric. I understand throwing meat to the half-wit simpletons who go to a lot of these rallies and self-masturbatory inflate themselves with rah-rahs of Make America Great Again. But on the international theater, this is very dangerous. Statements like that is what consolidate countries like North Korea, China, Russia, Iran together into a circle the wagons attitude. And we are very close to being Custer going over the hill and finding ourselves in the company of thousands of Indians or tens of millions of Muslims, shall we say. So this whole war rhetoric against Iran is an attempt to get us back to a Iran as the vassal of the United States. Now, let me just say very quickly, I used to do a lot of this in the military, the State Department. You work backwards the objectives, the objectives, the goals, the objectives, the strategy, and the tactics. So the goal is not to have an Iran in war. The goal is to have Iran scattered, broken, hungry, disassembled, segregated, with our own vassal governments and tribes giving us oil deals and gas deals and everything that we want in Iran, and a diaspora being sent out to destabilize other countries, China, Russia, India. We always thrive on destabilization and chaos. And we think, okay, we want to go into Iran and cause all this chaos and take control. How do we do it? We go to war. How do we go to war? Well, we have to do a false flag or threaten the American people or say that Iran has hurt us or is about to hurt us in order to get the American people behind it, like we did in 9/11. So we have a 9/11 event, and Gulf of Tonkin event, maybe all of the above. Gulf of Tonkin, ships sunk in the Mediterranean by Iran. Some building turned into a nuclear ash heap, but claim it was done by Iran. Send in a bunch of guys across the border to shoot up schools, claim it was done by Iran. This is going to mobilize the American people into a draft attitude that they'll throw on the uniforms and wear the rainbow flag on their arm and go marching off to fight the Iranians. That's what we'll do. And they're going to prepare to engineer self-inflicted false flag events in order to generate the requisite trauma and outrage that will then motivate and create the currents for people to show up at draft boards and military recruitment centers. That's their thinking. That's, you know, the globalist thinking. Because, again, it's full-spectrum dominance. It's McCain and Lindsey Graham and McCall and the neocons who are getting money from the Zionists to do this. Netanyahu giving the money. Netanyahu coming to Congress like he did in 2003. Oh, Americans got to go fight in Iraq because weapons of mass destruction and all that stuff. You know, so we're seeing them position and prepare for all this. But again, we're not America of 2001 or 2 or 3. We're not that America anymore. We've seen 20 years of this destruction and bloodshed and waste in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, and Syria. The world has created better technology. The world has become wise. The world has separated from the old American order. The world has separated into the BRICS order and is quickening. All of the biggest countries with the most resources are going into BRICS and divorcing itself from the United States. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkey, India, Brazil, South Africa, China. The Belt and Road Initiative is going to be winning the hearts and minds of all Europeans. The Europeans are preparing to overthrow their own governments because of the waste and the servitude and the destruction that they've done against their own people by buying into the U.S. policies. So the whole world is going to quicken into change, and the United States is about to self-inflict its own change, thinking that it's going to give it the gust of in the sails to carry it forward. And I think the only thing that's going to happen is that there's going to be no breath in the sails. No Americans are going to show up at the draft board. And if anybody comes knocking to draft them, they will not be walking away alive. And I'll finally say there was a report out that the U.S. Army has created a lot of recruiters. It has taken guys out of the ranks and made them recruiters. What are they doing? The U.S. Army is deploying long-range scouts, calling them recruiters to every town, every high school, to build up a roster of every military-aged man and woman that they can then aggressively recruit and draft into the next phase, probably next spring or summer. But this tells me the Biden draft notice is underway, and we better be prepared to oppose that through intelligent soft power policy rather than this endless war footing. And Trump had better take notes and be wise about it, or else he'll find himself a casualty of the same stupidity, Jim.
Brian.
You'll know the decline is near when you start to see laws passed to protect the Jews here in America from our anti-Semitism. They'll call it hate speech. They'll call it inflaming. But they're going to try to legislate a curb on our freedom of speech. And they've been trying to do this for a long time to try to curb our criticism. And I think it's pretty fair. I think of myself as a generally fair and balanced guy. And I've got heavy criticism for what's going on. If you think what happened in World War II Germany was unique, those people could think too. And when those men took all their money out of the banks prior or after World War I and split town, there were some major reactions that took place politically. And I'll tell you, ever since October 7th happened, there's been a lot of Jewish money that's being moved around away from institutions. They're threatening the academic institutions if they allow the kids to talk about Israel openly or to be pro-Hamas. These Jews are pulling their money out of the institutions. There's law firms all over the place that are trying to go after people civilly for damages related to speech and the Jews. I fear that the power industry that's behind it will stop at nothing to keep people from talking about these issues and laying this out. And if they're successful, and everything that we do or any other channel does in criticism of this particular series of events, once it becomes illegal and freedom of speech is curbed, you'll know that the countdown has begun and our Constitution no longer has the weight that it ought to have.
Let me add one thing to that, Jim. Tucker Carlson just had a guest on, the guy from Vermont, who put out the tweet saying, if you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, text it here. Remember that story? Some guy, he looked, you know, like an average computer dude. He got this image or this tweet or meme or whatever you want to call it from 4chan, one of those dark web things. And he put up, vote for Hillary Clinton. Go and text here. Go to this. This is how you do it. And they, 2 years after he put that up, they arrested him 7 days after Biden came into office. So it happened in January of 2021, which was 2 years after he put up the meme, hey, vote for Hillary Clinton by go to this website, you know, and texting here, as if you can vote by texting. They've charged him. Tucker Carlson interviewed him. I don't know if they gave him 10 years, but they have given him jail time. He went to court. He fought it. They convicted him. And essentially, that feeds into what Brian just said, that we may be right here already, that the First Amendment is dead and the courts have been weaponized with fanatical idiots that have no understanding of freedom of speech and are now going to be putting people into the dock, prosecuting them for all sorts of things. And criticism of Israel seems right at the top.
I think you got it right. I think that's correct. And I think it's already happening. Muslims, Democrats horrified by plan to halt Palestinian immigration to the U.S. Andre Carson, Toshiba Tella, Ilhan Omar are horrified by GOP plans that would halt Palestinian legal immigration into the U.S. This week, Representative Ryan Zinke of Montana, another House Republican, introduced legislation to ban DHS from providing green cards, visas, refugee status, parole to Palestinians. His legislation would also revoke visas for Palestinians in the U.S., making them eligible for deportation. This legislation keeps America safe, Zinke said. I don't trust the Biden admin any more than I do the Palestinian Authority to screen who's allowed to come into the U.S. In response,
I'm joined with
Carson, Taleb, and Omar issued a joint statement where they called Zinke's legislation xenophobic, punitive, and unconstitutional. As the three Muslim members of Congress were horrified by Representative Zinke's recently introduced bill to pause all visas, refugee status, and asylum for individuals owing passports issued by the Palestinian Authority indefinitely and to revoke others. Let's be clear. Using the full power of the state to target and persecute a particular ethnic group or nationality is fascism and pure bigotry. This legislation, by a former cabinet official no less, directly violates the Constitution and will illegally destroy the lives of hundreds of thousands of Palestinian immigrants who live in and contribute to American society. Though intended to target Muslims, the bill would also hurt Palestinian Christians who will be targeted by these provisions. History will harshly judge this xenophobic, punitive, and unconstitutional member. We call on the leadership of both parties to vocally and specifically condemn these comments and legislation to make clear that anti-Muslim and anti-Arab hate has no place in our politics, and to name it, meaning call it out when it happens. Despite claims that it's unconstitutional, the Supreme Court has ruled in Trump versus Hawaii, the president has extremely broad discretion under 8 U.S.C. 1182F to exclude aliens whom he believes are harming the nation's interests. Since Zinke introduced the legislation, House and Senate Democrats have sent a letter to Biden urging him to provide temporary protected status and divert enforcement departure to Palestinians in the U.S., a policy for which the far-left Council on American Islamic Relations is lobbying. Giving TPS and DED to Palestinians would ensure they cannot be deported from the United States. Meanwhile, James Clyburn let rip Biden's strategy, blame low support from black voters on GOP and a mega-leaning Supreme Court. His remark came after the latest New York Times-Siena poll showed former President Trump trouncing Biden, not only in several states Biden won in 2020, but among black Americans, something that has progressives like Clyburn freaking out. My colleague Mike Miller wrote, per the polling data, while Trump leads Biden 5 of the 6 most important battleground states, all of which Biden carried in 2020, just 1 year out from the election, Biden continues to suffer from growing serious doubts about everything from his age to his mishandling the economy to the never-ending border crisis to now his potentially ominous handling of the Israel-Hamas war. The poll shows Biden losing to Trump by margin of 3 to 10 points among registered voters in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. He leads only in Wisconsin. I'm embarrassed that should be the case, but by just 2 points. The report continues with the bad news for Democrats. Black voters, long a bulwark of Democrat and for Mr. Biden, are now registering 22% support for Mr. Trump, a level unseen in presidential politics for a Republican in modern times. It's no wonder Dems are flocking to friendly outlets like MSNBC to spread their narrative. Someone else is to blame for Biden's poor number with black voters. Check this out from his sit-down with Morning Joe. Democrat Representative Jim Clyburn says Biden's lackluster support among black Americans in recent polls is because of the conservative, mega-leaning Supreme Court. An incredulous Joe Scarborough asks him, do you believe Joe Biden is doing that poorly among black voters? Clyburn answered, absolutely not. Let me tell you what you're seeing there. People are focusing on some of the unfinished business. Sure, I'm disappointed, as any other black person, that we've not been able to renew the Voting Rights Act, but we're going to show why. But guess whose fault it is? The GOP House and conservative mega-leaning Supreme Court justices. Why haven't we done it, he continues? Because this conservative mega-leaning Supreme Court has desecrated the Voting Rights Act, and we have not been able to get the Republicans in the Congress to renew it. And so a lot of black people are disappointed that has not been done. Clyburn also bemoaned that Democrats were unable to renew the increase in child tax credit, which he said had a lot of black people upset. That is very important in the African-American community. So when he has the polling information, that's what they give you. No, I'm dissatisfied that we have not done these things. Not one word about staggeringly high inflation hitting American pocketbooks, everything from food to gas to mortgage payments. These are all things the Democrats and Joe caused with the reckless policies on stifling domestic energy production and, of course, pushing through the ridiculously named Inflation Reduction Act on Biden's watch. This isn't the first time the congressman has piped up about the presidential election and Democrat plans for how Biden might maneuver, as my colleague Sister Tolja wrote in September. Clyburn appeared to fire a warning shot at Biden over any hint of dropping Kamala Harris from the 2024 ticket. Contrary to what Clyburn wants his words to accomplish by speaking out, they only continue to show Biden is not the leader of his party. One sure way to combat the nonsense is statements of incompetence from the Biden admin, Democrat Party, and their allies in the legacy media is to support this website day in and day out. Another way, make a spin with VIP Gold and their allies in the media. Meanwhile, let me add, pro-Hamas protesters show up at President Biden's home. We charge you with genocide. President Joe can't seem to shake the pro-Palestinian activists. On Saturday, a horde of hundreds of protesters showed up at his home in Delaware. The demonstrators turned outside chanting, "Biden, Biden, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide." They also chanted slogans calling for a ceasefire as Israel continues its ground offensive in Gaza against Hamas. The protest was part of the Delaware-Palestine March, coinciding with the president's return after addressing the nation at Arlington National Cemetery on Veterans Day. The demonstration follows a series of major protests in Washington, D.C., where protesters targeted U.S. monuments, including the Andrew Jackson statue before the White House and the General Marquis de Lafayette statue. These acts of vandalism included smearing red paint on the White House gate and writing messages like, "Death to Israel" and "Gaza is going to win" on buildings. Biden, returning to his Delaware home Saturday, only a short distance from hundreds of protesters accusing him of genocide, Biden, returning to his residence in Wilmington after delivering a Veteran Day address as a Delaware-Palestine march commences in the same area. "President Biden, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide." Protesters are pushing for Biden to push himself for a ceasefire in Gaza as Israel continues its ground invasion. Protests like these have been a regular occurrence since Hamas launched its surprise attack. Activists, mostly on the left, have been vocally denouncing Israel while defending and at times even praising Hamas. The demonstration occurred against a backdrop of brutal violence in Gaza, in which Hamas has been using civilians as human shields against Israeli airstrikes, while also using violence to prevent Gaza residents from fleeing. So far, Biden has not pushed for a ceasefire. He has urged the Jewish state to use caution when attacking in Gaza and to allow humanitarian aid into the region, but has maintained Israel has a right to defend itself. The administration has tried to get Israel to agree to 4-hour daily pauses to allow civilians a chance to escape to the southern region as Hamas loses control over the north, but it has not agreed. Much of the pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas protests has been funded by George Soros Open Society. Some may have even become violent, as it did in Ventura County, California, when a Jewish man was killed during a demonstration in New York. Anti-Israel rioters became unruly at Grand Central Station and protested in various parts of the city. They sought to kick the doors in at the station to fight with police officers. "F you, you Zionist pig," Palestinians have already yelled at a Daily News reporter outside the New York Times building before cops separated them. Meanwhile, Biden threatens to defund schools. On Tuesday, Secretary of Education warned if school did not fight Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, meaning criticism of Israel, they could risk losing access to federal funding. In an interview on CNN, Secretary Miguel Cardona argued that they wanted to promote free speech and that college campuses were an area where students should be allowed to express various opinions. However, that did not mean anti-Semitism and Islamophobia had any place on college campuses and schools. Following the outbreak of the war between Israel and Hamas, there's been increased pressure to ensure there was still freedom of speech on college campuses. However, there's also been concern about how the conflict has affected freedom of speech. Many colleges' campuses trying to maintain both free speech and safety. Last month, George Washington University students faced backlash after they projected on the side of the campus library an anti-Israel message. This incident also led to many politicians commenting. Representative Jared Moskowitz of Florida, an alumni of the college, that they needed to launch an investigation into the incident, and the university made a statement about it. Students for Justice in Palestine at George Washington stated they were responsible for the projection the university police ended up shutting down. One of the group represented toward the GW Hatchet, the student newspaper. They were frustrated by the college response. They have shown they have no respect for the lives, freedom of speech, or the right to speak up against a genocide of their people. I think the students got it right. Scott, your comments on all of the above.
Well, again, I look at this as a political opportunity for the alternative voices of peace, of stability, of calm, of reason, of the classic American virtues of temperance, and not this emotional vomiting, hysteria, paranoia, and delusion, which has taken us over like a leprosy since 2001. And Biden is being engulfed with it because he deserves to be destroyed. He's an ambassador from hell himself, if he even is the real person, which I don't think he is. And all of his minions and his sodomites, from Obama and Michael Avon Robinson to all of the other godless demoniacs around the Democrat Party, they're all imploding. They've become the party of war and bloodshed and colonialism. And sadly, Republicans are falling into that. They seem to be missing the heartbeat and the temperance of the American people. There's a reason people went to Biden's house to protest, the Palestinian situation, Israel situation. It's not out of love for the Palestinians. It is out of a fear of America being sucked into a whirlpool of war and chaos and bloodshed and destruction and nuclear craters and things it will never recover from. That's what people are sensing, and they're trying to stop this before the ship runs into the iceberg, and then we sink. And people know instinctively that these fools driving the ship are going to lie to themselves and say, oh, the iceberg isn't so bad. No, we'll stay afloat. We're the United States of America. And every sane person has said, no, it's only a matter of time. Now you've ripped out the guts of the ship. Now you've turned every Muslim nation against us. Now Europe itself has turned against us. You have Russia, China, Iran, all the BRICS nations. What country do you have on your side except Zelensky in Ukraine? And he's only on our side because we're continuing to give him dollars. But even that little traitor is going to be deported soon. So Americans are looking for leaders that will carve out a temperate ground of peacemaking. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. And we don't seem to be gravitating to that. And even Donald Trump is making potentially lethal, suicidal mistakes in his rhetoric, in his campaigning. He needs to carve out. You're not going to win the presidency in any way, shape, or form by having just 50% of the people. You're not going to win the presidency by having just MAGA supporters, people who show up, MAGA, Roseanne Barr and the rest of them. That's a tiny percentage. Look at what the majority of the people in this country think and understand. And the majority of the people in this country are not that smart. They're not that briefed. They aren't aware. They don't watch our show. Only the tip of the spear does. But they're exposed to the toxicity of the mainstream media. But their instincts are driving them to, we don't want another war. We don't want to go down this route again. This isn't 2001. So they're looking for alternative voices to peace. And Trump needs to be that voice of peace. And if he's not, I don't guarantee that he's going to get back in. We haven't even gotten into the fact that he's been indicted. He's been gagged. And I believe the next step of the courts, they are going to throw him in jail over the gag order. That's what judges can do. They have full discretion to throw you in jail. Once they put a gag order on you, they can say, well, you violated the gag order. I'm throwing you in jail. You can appeal it to the Supreme Court. Oh, by the way, you're going to be dead the moment you get into that jail cell. Someone's going to jab you with the needle. Someone's going to push you downstairs. You're going to have a heart attack, Mr. Trump. That's what I predict possibly happening. And anybody who doesn't think the judges can do that is a fool that doesn't know the judicial tyranny that we're in. I've been there. I've seen it. So we're on a dangerous position when everybody's clamoring for war and conflict. And even the Republicans are doing it because, again, the American people aren't going this way. They don't want to go this way. And they're going to be responding to candidates who say, hey, there's a better way. There's a better way to influence. And again, Trump's lethal mistakes in this Middle East conflict have been giving everything he can to Israel, becoming the Jewish president, and they stabbed him in the back. And what does he gain from it? Again, the whole Ukrainian situation was evolved. So we need to have a complete turnaround away from, sleeping with the whore, the Israelis. And if we do that, there's a chance that the United States might survive. If we don't do that, the fall of Rome is inevitable and Sodom and Gomorrah is our destiny, Jim.
Brian.
Yeah, the problem with you've got sort of a boy who cried wolf problem that's beginning to develop. It's sort of the precious Jews, worthless whites. These people are more important than these people, and these people, well, the stigma's gone. They've overplayed the poker hand of racism too hard for too long. It no longer has the same toxic, poisonous effect that it used to have to be able to go out and do this. And so when you protest too much, oh, look at, he put up a pro Hamas poster. He's a bad guy. He's not, that's anti-Jew. That's anti-Semitism. You know, the problem is you take away the real meaning of what a real racist really is. And we have to be able to talk about it. It goes back to the old adage, did Archie Bunker expose what a racist looked like so that everybody could see it and evaluate it for what he was, or did he glorify it? I tend to believe that he exposed it. That people saw it for what it was, because people can think and people can do this. Well, I can tell you one thing I never expected to see happen here in America is to see the people grab on to what Donald Trump was talking about when he talked about the lying mainstream media coverage. And now that we've been chewing on it for a while, people are beginning to wake up to the fact that every news media outlet out there is controlled by somebody from Bilderberg or the Council of Foreign Relations or the Trilateral Commission. And every boardroom related to all these media organizations is loaded with powerful billionaire oligarchs and Jews.
Wow.
Yes. We have some additional stories. I'll seek to combine them. Trump vows largest domestic deportation operation in U.S. history. Repeating his vow to restore a strong border policy, Trump said he'll deliver the largest domestic deportation operation in U.S. history on day one. I will terminate every open border policy of the Biden admin and will begin the largest domestic deportation operation in America history. So sad we even have to talk about this. But we have no choice. We have bad people, terrorists at levels no one has ever seen. He noted the rise of terrorists crossing the southern border amid unrest in the Middle East, which he said was brought by Biden's emboldening the enemies of the U.S. and Israel. You know, we had a good, strong policy. We wanted people to come, but we wanted them to come in legally, legally. If you hate America, if you want to abolish Israel, if you sympathize with the jihadists, then we don't want you in our country and we're not going to let you come. The Israeli Hamas war has done more than embolden U.S. enemies, Trump warned. To all the resident aliens who join in the pro-jihadist protests and become very violent and start destroying our capital and other places, we put you on notice. Come 2025, we'll find you and deport you. Meanwhile, Tucker promises max support for Trump in a 2024 campaign while discussing charges against Trump with Glenn Greenwald. He mentioned many Americans do not view them as traditional crimes and do not believe he should be in prison if found guilty. These are, of course, all the cases brought against Trump. Tucker Greeden declared, I think a lot of people feel that way, just as a middle finger. No secret, Trump legal battles have resulted in massive influx of donation to his campaign. The fundraising success has been extensively covered. Each indictment has proven to be a political fundraising gold mine. Trump has managed to outpace Biden in fundraising, even in Democrat states like Minnesota. Tucker reveals he'll give Trump a max donation for 2024. Dazed and confused, Joe Biden focuses on LGBT plus stuff during Veterans Day speech and flubs that too. Biden set out Saturday to attend the various Veterans Day ceremonies that presidents normally attend, but found himself dazed and confused more than once. Things kicked off at the White House, where Biden was joined by VP Harris, the Joint Chiefs and active service members. He walked up to pose for pictures. His physical appearance was bleak, with his back hunched and a blank look on his face. He then walked away before turning around in confusion as to what he was supposed to do. At that point, a service member stepped in to point him in the right direction. Biden gets confused again. He then made his way to Arlington Cemetery to deliver a speech. There were some senile moments, but the theme of the speech was more insulting than anything. Biden talking. No veteran is denied the honor they earned because there is discharge for being LGBTQ+. You can tell a president is really invested in the whole LGBTQ thing by the fact he can't even remember what the acronym is. He's reading off a teleprompter, still can't get it right, and it's far from the only time he made that flop. It's a testament to how much the far left has captured the Democrat Party. You've got these old geriatric politicians trying to repeat talking points fed to them by their radical staff, and they can't quite get them right. It's a sad state of affairs. It's also insulting. Veterans Day is not about LGBTQ+, or whatever other letters the president wants to throw in there. It's about honoring the sacrifice of those who serve, including the heroic action of those who deliver the freedom and prosperity we enjoy today. Being a veteran is not about being part of some left-wing identity group. It's about being part of the whole, working forward toward one congruent whole. Biden's handlers can't help themselves. Everything has to be brought back to the far-life idea of intentionalism. That's how you get Democrat politicians proclaiming that anti-abortion laws disproportionately affect the LGBTQ community, even though it makes no logical sense at all. Biology still exists, and they're not reproducing. Everything is that, just LGBT mad libs at this point. It doesn't matter what the topic is. One's sexual orientation or gender identity must be mentioned and highlighted. I assume most veterans listen to this stuff and roll their eyes. No one who took down Nazism or destroyed Al-Qaeda is losing sleep over whether the military is going to pay for genital mutilation for transgenders. That's where we are now, though. The leadership is more concerned with virtue signaling to far-left political demographics than in winning wars. The results have been and will continue to be predictable. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, on Veterans Day or on Memorial Day, honoring veterans, it's important to remember who we are as veterans and what we've sworn an oath to uphold, what we have not sworn an oath to uphold. We have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and defend it and preserve it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That means foreign enemies, whether they be in Russia and Iran or China or Yemen or South Africa or Greece or Germany or any other nation on planet Earth, any enemy that comes in to destroy the United States Constitution, and the Constitution being the shield for people's lives and stability and tranquility and the freedoms that guarantee them and give them the energy that animates people to be productive and to flourish and to generate a living. That's what the Constitution was created for. It's to protect people's ability to make a living and pursue property and happiness. And nothing can undermine that. The military was created to protect that ability, to protect that freedom and liberty. It was not created to be a license to go around and destroy other countries or steal their resources or make them vassals or engage in any other thing. George Washington had said that too. Do not be entangled in foreign wars. We've become entangled in foreign wars. The Israelis have tangled us up. We've allowed them to tangle us up by corrupt politicians who've been bribed by them. We've even had bad, corrupt military people and intelligence level people who've been corrupted by it. So, you know, the oath as veterans to support and defend the Constitution doesn't go away. And we don't put it on the sidelines for a president, whether it's Trump or anyone else or Biden or anyone else, though I've never seen an American military member that can openly support Democrats or Biden as a true member. But we have to be that unyielding steel bar in the wind that doesn't bend to political persuasion or compromise. And that's one of the reasons that I am unyielding in my critique sometimes when Trump, when I see him doing things wrong, I don't mind standing up saying, no, this is wrong, because I'm trying to influence him for the better. I'm trying to give him and people around him better ideas and not letting them sink into deception. And that was part of his failures. He had bad people around him that were deceiving him. And we've hit the ground because of that. So as veterans, we have a duty to stand up. And I'll end it by saying this. When I joined and got a direct commission, which is very rare, nobody gets direct commissions anymore, unless you're a doctor and a surgeon, and that's because you're being made, you know, a hospital staff. But I got a direct commission as an officer in psychological warfare. And there is a reason for that. Because I went in when I was interviewed and said, I've been with the Bush administration, I've got advanced degrees, I'm fluent in different languages, I've got all sorts of other backgrounds and abilities from advertising and film. I can do what no one else can do, Colonel. You put me into a position of psychological warfare, I will beat everybody when it comes to generation of narratives. I will destroy every opposition. You want to test it? You put me in and watch it. And that was enough for them to say, this man has the stuff, we'll put him in as a direct commission officer. And they did. But with that commission came a lot of responsibility. And it wasn't just because I was commissioned then. I'd been in the Civil Air Patrol. My father was a Marine Corps aviator. I had a lot of uncles and grandparents who were military in Scotland and the United States. And you carry with it a long historical tradition of what military service is. And that is, above all things, honor and truthfulness and valor and fearlessness and courage and standing up for what is right when all others are bowing down out of the lust for money or the fear of being politically offensive. We don't care if we offend everybody and anybody. If it's the right thing to say and do, we stand for it because the Constitution calls us to stand, to be a voice for righteousness when all others are mute, and it may cost us our lives. So I just wanted to remind people, this is what veterans are supposed to represent. They stand up and speak the truth when no others will stand or speak. And that is why Americans put their faith in people in the military. And right now we're in an existential crisis where a lot of people in the military don't reflect those true virtues. And I think the sooner we get back to that, the safer our country will be, Jim.
Thank you, Scott. Brian.
Yeah, the best way to honor our veterans is to continue to fight for the freedoms that they fought for. And that's what we're here doing on this show and on this channel. I consider it to be a patriotic duty to volunteer my time along with these fine gentlemen to come out here and talk to this audience. But I'm going to remind you of something very important. Those who lie have to remember their lies. They got to come back later. They're going to lose all credibility if the lie has changed and something's different. So people who lie end up hiding in a closet because they can't interact with the world. They're not liked. They're not trusted. And they're liars. And they have no character. To develop character, one must face the fact that they have flaws, that they have problems. themselves, that they carry baggage that needs to be disposed of, and they must take some time to perform the step of introspection where they can see their strengths and their weaknesses and emerge on the other side with actual character. An actual character doesn't need to defend itself, doesn't need to verbally come out and say this or say that. Actual character just walks around and tells the truth and points out the truth as it develops and calls it like they see it, like an umpire. It's nice to live your life like that. And so at the end of the day, all I would encourage for all of our listeners is just to come clean. Deal with it. I didn't say come clean to some priest or sit in some box and do it. I didn't say go talk to the guy at the church. I didn't say any of that. I said take some time. Look in the mirror. Figure out who you are. Come clean with your flaws. Then you'll be able to start constructing a better, stronger character, which will change this nation.
Well said. Don, take us out.
Oh, boy. What a show today here on the 12th of November. This is very important. These times are critical. You need to have facts that you can only probably get here. And so share these facts so the world will be a better place. And so we thank you so much for all you're doing here. So God bless. Bye-bye.